Yeah, okay. So today is October 6th, 2019, Ben Kessel Liasa. A big hello to the students in front of me, to the many across the world. We have a Brit next Sunday, Eli Weinstein. That means is he and his wife are now hugging a baby boy as we speak. With the other end of life cycle, I want to dedicate this year to the memory of Rabbi Solomon Maimon. He may have been the last Talmud of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. I met him in Seattle. He's the man who built Seattle. He's the man who built the Sephardic community there, which was world famous. He was there for many, many decades. And a Yirei Shemayim, a Talmud Chacham, a fabulous rabbi. Ish Asher HaRuach Bo. When you met him, you knew you were meeting inspiration and a spiritual leader. He arrived in the yeshiva in 37. I guess that's when he started college. He got smicha in the early 40s already when the Rav started teaching. And he was yet a Talmud of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. At Gedav Seberchen Zetzeina, he sled in Yiddish. He had to break his teeth to learn Yiddish. And that's the famous story. Someone sent me a slightly different variation of the story, but the variation that I heard, and I told it when I spoke in Seattle, and Rabbi Maimon was in the first row, he fainted when I told the story. He didn't correct me. He couldn't believe that I knew the story. But the story was legendary in the yeshiva, that he's sitting in front of the Rav, and he's one of the top Talmidim, and he's speaking in his broken Yiddish, and he's giving the Rav a Sfara, and you all know, I told you, I once played it in the Kollel. They came up with a cassette where in Masechet Sanhedrin, where I gave a Sfara, the Rav called me a Reform Rabbi. And the whole class laughs, and I'm not mad at the Rav, I'm proud that he, who it chashev me, all right, Reform Rabbi, so zayin hazeh. But I'm mad at my classmates that had a good laugh at my expense. So when Rabbi Maimon was speaking, the Rav shot back at him to play this via Turk, via Shika Turk. What you're saying doesn't make sense. You sound like a drunk Turk. And the whole class started to laugh. So the Rav said, "Was geht on? What are you laughing? Was geht on?" And they said, "Rebbe is a Turk. He is a Turk." And the Rav spoke to him, "Where do you come from? Your family?" It turned out at the plate of the Turk, and he was Turkish origins. He was a Turkish Jew. So it warmed up him to the Rav, and warmed up the Rav to him. In my time too, I think he's the chief rabbi of the Flatbush community, Rabbi Shol Katzin, he got smicha maybe a year after me. He was my classmate with the rabbi. I believe he graduated college with me. And then the Sfadim had to speak Yiddish. They had to become one of the, just like I had to break my teeth to learn Yiddish. I learned at an earlier age, because in seventh grade already, as I've told you many times, and those of you who have opened up Washington know what I'm talking about, I'm only sitting here due to Sempo Sugihara, Isaac. And the people that Sempo Sugihara sent to America didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. But they had to learn Yiddish at a later age. When they came into the yeshiva, they had to master Yiddish, and the Sfadi kids were one of the boys, with Yiddish, the Rav. We all sat there, frightened stiff of the master, and one of the boys. Today, YU, of course, has a Sfadi program. It's beautiful. They have a Sfadi based medrash, they have Sfadi Rashi Yeshiva. All right, it's a sign of the times. Now, so a few things that I mentioned, I just want to comment on, because I've gotten quite a bit of correspondence from across the world. The story with Reb Chaim, a Talmud listening, Rabbi David Mack, sent me another version. What I'm talking about is the Brit, how Mori Urebi got the name Yosef Dov Halevi, Minig Yisrael, the first child born. Not the Brit that will be next Sunday, but the first child born in a family, Minig Yisrael, is the mother names the baby. She went through labor, she had a baby, it's a traumatic experience, certainly the first time, So she gets the right to name the baby. So how did the Rav get the name Yosef Dov Halevi? It's after his great-grandfather. So I told you that Rav Chaim came to Rebbetzin. I heard this with these ears from the Rav. Rav Chaim came to Rebbetzin Pesha, and he said to her, Pesha, you know I'm never Sunday, I can't stand the sight of blood. And this is true. The Soloveitchiks had a big problem with death. I don't believe Reb Chaim, or the Rav for that matter, could serve frontline in the Israeli army. The Beit Halevi and Reb Velvel could serve frontline in the Israeli. And anyone who's listening who knew the Beit Halevi or knew Reb Velvel understands me 100%. And if you doubt what Reb Kefir is saying, check with Reb Yeruchim Yerelik. These years, Baruch Hashem, heard a lot of good things. So Reb Chaim said, I'm afraid of blood, I can't understand, Scott, but I'll be Sandik if you name the baby after my father. No one in the family has given it a name, Reb Yosef Bass, and Pesha agreed. So that's the story I heard. Here there's a version that this is all true, but when it came to the Brit, Reb Chaim disappeared. And people say he disappeared because he couldn't stand the sight of blood. But that's not the version I heard from the Rav. Shulamit Meisman has a theory. He felt that since the baby's being named after his father, let his mechutin, Reb Elia Feinstein, Reb Elia Bruzhana, let him be the Sandek. That's why he disappeared. I gave the version I heard from the Rav. If the Rav is wrong, the Rav is wrong. What do you want out of me? He was a baby 8 days old. He only could be as big a Neely as he was. This is an Otzko. I mean, Otzko would say the kid was 8 years old and he knew what was going on, but this is not Otzko. We try to be historically honest. There's a big difference between Otzko and honesty, and it's very important to be honest. Not for now, but I can bring you 1,001 proofs my honesty is so important. There are kids today who are Machal Shabbos, Ochling, the Beilet, and Trefet, and all because they're Rebbeim, we're not honest to them. I suffer. I can tell you stories. God have mercy. You have to be honest. Let the kid decide, but you have to be honest. Okay. So then the question of the blood, so a Talmud listening in England sent me from, I have this sefer, Uvdot v'Hanhagot LeBeit Brisk, so they talk about Reb Velvel. So one time Reb Velvel is at a Brit, or discussing a Brit, and a Talmud says to him, how can we go to a Brit? How can we Sandek? How can you look to see the blood coming out of the child? And Reb Velvel got all upset with this insolent student, and he answered, "Hayitachein? That's what you're worried about? Harei zuhi mitzvah, uma shayach lekan regesh tivi. Ha'imein b'kochal shel mitzvah l'shanot et ha'teva." And wow, very powerful statement by Reb Velvel, which is typical to Reb Velvel, typical to at least part of Brisk. It's a mitzvah. When it's a mitzvah, you know what the Rav said, Nishalacha, about sunset this coming Wednesday afternoon. No? It's a different sunset than any other sunset during the year, Dov. Because with that sunset, all your sins are forgiven. You follow? A different sunset from any other sunset during the year. All your sins are forgiven. This is not blood. This is a mitzvah. This is a brit. All right? Let's go back in time. I just got a shayla on Minhag Hagra. So the person calling me, before I can ask the shayla, I was like a chassidic rebbe. I knew what he was going to ask, and I told him, I can't give you a definite answer. I told him two different points of view that I uncovered in my own research. But I said, I'm looking forward. What's so great about the computer? It's unbelievable what you have there. Type in the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Isaac, you'll get enough material to be busy for 7 years just watching the Rebbe in action. You understand? It's better. If you go to YU Torah, type in Rakefet, you'll get enough Sheyorim to keep you busy for 7 years, but you'll fall asleep because it's not Rakefet teaching, it's just his voice. The Rebbe, you'll see, you'll be intrigued, you'll be enthralled. Wow. Do you understand Yiddish? So how are you going to watch the Rebbe? I don't understand. So let me tell me, Isaac, let's repeat a little conversation. Have you read Washington, yes or no?
Not yet.
God, you told me that on Friday. How can you breathe there? If you read Washington, you'll see what I tell you there. With this chassid, do you remember the story? He was assigned to help me in a big, one of the greatest thing I did in my life, and I can't even talk about it. 50 years from now, Danny Kurtz will say, I am proud to have known Aaron Rakefet. Okay? Take my word for it. I know what I'm saying. So they assigned this kid to help me, and I wanted to do something for the kid, and someone helps me, from a student, all right, Mela, he carries my books, fine. But this kid's a stranger. He was assigned. He worked in this firm, and they said, your job for the next 2 weeks, whatever Harav Rakefet needs help, to schlep, to do, to want, you're his boy Friday. Fine. So I said to the kid, Shabbos, I'm speaking in Hillcrest. I'm Skull in Residence. Can you come? You'll hear a few shayurim from me. I'll feel happy. I'm giving you something. So the kid said, oh, no, I can't come. I'm going to be sleeping at the grave of the Rebbe. This was right after the Rebbe died. And there were people sleeping there thinking the Rebbe would stand up on Shabbos. Okay? Then I got to talk with the kid, and he tells me he has, word by word, this is absolute truth, he has 1,000 plus tapes of the Rebbe. So I say to the kid, wow, how do you know Yiddish? Kids from the coast, parents became Baal Tshuva, Americans, blueberry pie, turkey on Thanksgiving. You can't get more American. 1,000, how do you Yiddish? So the kid says to me, I'll never forget it, no, I don't know Yiddish. I say, so why do you need 1,000 tapes? One, two, I can understand you. Want to hear the Rebbe? No, each tape has a different nuance. Okay? You understand? This is Yiddish. This is understanding Torah, Yerubayim, the previous generation. And I admire that Hasidic kid. 1,000 tapes, and it's just the Rebbe's in his tone of voice. Up, down, less, smile, cry, joke, etc. 1,000 tapes, not understanding Yiddish. Let me tell you, Scott, if you'd be sitting in Reb Noach Bornstein's class now, and you would tell Reb Noach what I just said, he'd throw you out head first. You'd be faster than a missile flying out of the room, you amoritz to the 50th power. Gone. Something else came up, and I want to make myself clear, and I'll be melamed zchut. Look, I quoted the memoirs of Rabbi Mordechai Elefant in the context of what we're talking about in a minute. Endless people have downloaded the memoirs. I've gotten so many questions. This man was a gangster, you know. And I told you the story. I said here in class, you can pick it up on the tapes. I said 50% gangster, 50% gone. First of all, Vic, who is Reb Mordechai Elefant, Talmid Mufak of Reb Aaron Cutler from the earliest Talmid, and his father was a Rav in Brooklyn. I can guarantee that your famous uncle, Reb Yisrael Snow, knew him at the Chaim Berlin crowd. You understand this? Mordechai Elefant. All right, now I admit I am prejudiced. What does that mean? It's my family today. Reb Mordechai Elefant and his wife had no children. My grandson is married to his great niece. Okay? So I admit I'm prejudiced. I have a right to be prejudiced. And it happened, Minas Shamayim, I wind up in the memoirs, Scott. Do you know why I wind up in the memoirs? Effie, why do I wind up in the memoirs? Washington. You have to know it. The Sheva Brachas, Reb David Lipschitz's daughter, marrying Reb Nissen Kamenetsky. The Sheva Brachas in Reb David's house. There's the Reb speaking. There's Reb Shmuel Soloveitchik, my chemistry professor. And there's Mordechai Elephant leaning to catch every word the Rav is saying. Effie, I am prejudiced, but I want to explain to you. I said 50-50. When my grandson and my granddaughter-in-law read the memoirs, they said, remember, one-third gone, two-thirds gangster. In Lakewood, when they honored me, this Chaval recording was made of my talk and the interaction, and Aaron Cutlin, myself, and back and forth. It was an amazing day, and the Russia getting involved from Ukraine. It was a moment in time, and Imodela Kaddish Baruch Hu, I don't take it for granted, because to be appreciated, it's a great achievement in life. I don't take it for granted. I spoke about it in Beit Shemesh. I don't repeat the talk last Thursday night. Spoke about the Gezoha HaKol Tului B'Mazal HaFil Sefer Torah Shebaheichal. So in Lakewood they said 1% gone, 99% gangster. Okay? I just want to respond that you have to understand he was a character that there are no two ways about. He was a character. He wasn't the run-of-the-mill individual. He was a gong, had a goynish cup. He was a bucky and kudshim, and he had a certain spirit and enjoyment of life. He was not a musinik who became a parush, okay? I'll put it that way. Now, it's true, he moved with all the politicians. He got Golda Meir to come to the dedication. She was prime minister, came to the dedication of victory. She covered her hair. She had a lengesagt, ich bin a jüdische Mädel. I grew up with Jew. You know, her mother went with a tichel down there. Her father had a beard like this. Golda was Golda. It's the tragedy of our times. Take a look at Gantz. You know who Gantz is? The whole family is Satma. In America, they're ashamed of him. And he had Jack shifted to Hatikva. Okay. Effie, he had a terrific Torah education. His parents are from, all right, they became Mizrachistim like Rakefet. No, I wouldn't cry about it. Rabbi Zalman's family, I told him in Lakewood, had Rabbarin, you know my theory, had Rabbarin come to Israel, he would be part of the Kippah Srugah crowd today, like the rest of Rabbi Zalman's family. The biggest test, the yeshiva, was built by Rabbaran Cutler's cousins. Rabbi Yehuda Amital, a grandson-in-law to Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. So what are we talking about? Ben Menachem, son-in-law, God. It's right on. But, all right, these people, look what they came from. Look where they're at. He moved with these big people. He was a character. He got involved with Gaddafi. Everyone knew this. But look what he built. Itri stands until today. It's in an Arab neighborhood. It was land given to him exactly on the old border. Right or wrong? And he got along with the Arabs, got along with his neighbors, built an institution. All right. He overstated with the money. It became a goal, not just a necessity for the yeshiva. And later there were problems, ultimately. We don't even know what really happened in the 1990s. I lived there. I'm here for over 50 years. But that was when he was, his gabbai, he was ill. The gabbai robbed $1 million. They wanted to press charges. And that's when Ari Derry came on the scene. This is before he went to jail. And he quieted everything down and solved it. There was no criminal case. So we have to leave it with a question mark. Effie, you're a young man. You want to do a doctorate? Rabbi Mordechai Elephant. The saga of Rabbi Mordechai Elephant. But I want to be Malamed Schut. Don't take his memoir that's all he did in life. All right, he gave this memoir, he dictated it, he boasted, he told stories. Danny, I love it. He was friendly with Joe DiMaggio. You know what that means to me? Come on, let's not play games. This is Joe DiMaggio. Hagadoy l'meshe ba'aretz. So I just wanted to say a few words of schut because I see people are so angry and reading the memoir, they don't realize there was a lot of good to the man. And I stand at my original estimation, 50% Gaon, 50% gangster. Back here. We've spent many months now, and this is going to come up in the Monday class. It's very, very important to understand this. Are you allowed to invite someone to your house who's going to drive on Shabbos? Are you allowed to make a minyan? People are going to drive to the minyan. Are you allowed to make a Sudat Shabbat and people are going to drive to the Sudah in the shul? And this question comes up time after time. We've spent many months on it. It's probably one of the most difficult questions we have in the year 2020. I agree that aguna questions, the man inflicted aguna, that's difficult. But this is also extremely difficult and painful. And we saw so many different opinions. But alaycha lemaisa, if you want to be mekil, yesh al mi lesmoch. And that's what we saw last time we met, dealing with Rav Shmuel Pinchasi, the Minchat Shmuel, a Sfadik Rav by Rosh Kollel, right here in Yerushalayim, right here in Geula, right here in the heart of the Sfadik land. And he also is among all the Mekilim, and he tries Lelamed Skotan Rav Moshe, because Rav Moshe is the most extreme. It's what's so fascinating here, that Rav Moshe Sternbuch, the Av Beitin of the Eidah Haredit, he is the most lenient. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, who, and when I learned in Lakewood, they used to say, Rav Moshe Matitzich. Dov, do you catch that, or do I have to go crazy to try to explain it in English? Isaac, in Yiddish it means Rav Moshe Matitzich. It's like Rakefet, he works hard, he's tired. I've been awake since I started learning this morning a 3:45. You follow? Baruch Hashem, I'm going through Shas. It's not to do with my teaching, I'm doing a lot of other things, but I want to show the Ribbono Shel Olam I'm an Amoritz, but at least I tried to. It's the third time I'm going through Shas. So then I'll have a Chazakah. I went through Al Haseda word by word, Rashi, Tosfos, Rishonim, Pesachim, Rambam. All right, I remember very little, and I master very little, but no one can say I didn't try. Lo alecha hamalacha ligmar. So thus meant, I'm tired. Aaron matitzich. But play on words. Rav Moshe matitzich, he's tiring himself out being matir. Permitting so many, you got it, Effie? Permitting so many different things. And here Rav Moshe, the greatest machman in the world, the mesit umediach. So I thought I was finished. One more source came my way, and I have to thank Scott. You gave me the volume. I just made a CM on Shabbos, and I sent him a 2-3-page letter this morning for Sherry to send out with comments I made. This volume just appeared. Igrot Malkei Rabbanan. It's a Talmud of mine whose life changed in the room down in the corner. Are you aware, Scott? Do you know the author personally? Do you know how his life changed? He had a teacher named Rakefet. And sitting in that room in BMT, I was giving a shiur, and I brought in Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. And if you open up his doctorate from Harvard, published by Litman, and you open the introduction, Isaac, did you read occasionally? You open up, did you read Mark Shapiro's classic work on Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg?
Not yet.
Not yet. Just my son. Effie, it's what my grandchildren, I say, did you read? But my grandchildren have an excuse. They read Hebrew, not English. But now, not entirely. I have some grandchildren with PhDs and MDs, etc., and they kiss my fingers that we insisted on speaking English to their mother and English to them. But my great-grandchildren, some are going to know English too. Yeah, some are going to know English too. But you read English, read the introduction. in BMT, in that room, my Rebbe, Aaron Rakefet, mentioned Rebbe Chaim Zalman, and that changed this kid's life. And he became world famous on his work on Rebbe Chaim Yaakov Weinberg. Volume after volume he's put out. It's an amazing work, but again, not for now, let me stick to the topic. When you know too many different things, it's no good. Okay, I know a person who's a professor at Hebrew U. He's the greatest expert in the world on one topic, which is doctorate. Woodrow Wilson in World War I. He lectures all over the world on that topic. But he always is. He always bothers me. Rabbi Aaron, how can you lecture on so many different topics? You understand? All right. Only on topics that I think I know the equivalent of a PhD. If you're going to ask me to lecture on biblical criticism, I won't do it. I'll say, go to this one or that one. Jewish philosophy, it's not the, but other fields, Baruch Hashem. I'm there. Changed the world. Now, he has a very good position. He teaches in a Jesuit university, University of Scranton, Pennsylvania. He has the Judaic chair, which oddly enough was endowed by a family named Weinberg. Nothing to do with his doctorate. It's a Jewish family that endowed the Weinberg chair of Judaic studies. Well, he has plenty of time. He, you know, his students there are not exactly Gedolei Yisrael, and you repeat everything year after year. It's not like the Kollel. I haven't repeated a shiur since the Kollel began a set program in 78. So he has time. He corresponds with all the Rabbanim, and he put together all the answers he got from Rabbanim all over the world with his correspondence. And here, on page Memchet 48, Siman Chafhei, he has a brief tshuva from a Ephraim Greenblatt. Anyone here from Memphis, Tennessee?
I'm not from Memphis. No.
But you know what I'm talking about. He was the Rav in Memphis, Talmud of Rav Moshe Feinstein, first-rate Talmud Chacham. He died in Hanover, his final years when Yerushalayim. He was greatly hurt by the Madoff scandal. He greatly hurt it, took his health away. Because here he thought he had money, and when each grandchild got married, I remember his writing this when the scandal broke. If my memory is correct, he gave each grandchild towards a home, buying a home in Israel, $50,000. And suddenly all his money dried up. And you know, I can understand what we have seen in life, what we have seen in life. So, Rabbi Greenblatt's a Talmud of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And here, Liyadidi, Rabbi Melech Shapiro, Nero Yacharej, Vishnat Shlomo, Hatov, Rabbinic Hebrew. I'll translate. In relation to your question, inviting someone Friday night, Kiruv Rechokim, Ben Kovako, if he doesn't come to your house, he's going to drive and he's going to eat food that's not kosher. And he says, you did the right thing. You told him you have a place for him to sleep, but you knew he's not going to listen. But you did the right thing. You invited him. I heard that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach paskins this way. And he absolutely agrees with Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's tshuva. So what's fascinating here, and Scotty said it to me, and he's absolutely right, here's a Talmud Muvak of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he's 100% making like Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So I end off. All I can say is, I personally, and I admit, I don't know. I think I'm a good Jew. I don't think I'm a Haredi. I guess I don't know. In this world, I tend much more to Rav Moshe. It troubles me that we're going to have cars outside our house Friday night, and yet you want to break off relations with children. It troubles me. You're going to open a shul, and we had Eidut Nemana, Atlanta, Georgia. I saw with these eyes the parking lot is open Shabbos. People told me there's some Chabad shuls where the parking lot is open Shabbos. a Talmud wrote in, Talmud from Beit Shemesh, that where he grew up, you didn't park in the conservative temple, you davened, you parked in the other conservative temple, which was two blocks away, so that you knew you're not allowed to drive on Shabbos, you made a shinui where you parked. Where are we different than the conservatives? It troubles me. I'll go one step further. Those of you that use the computer, and I have to admit I was taught how to use the computer by a young Talmud in the Kollel. Whenever I meet him, he always comes to hear my lectures. When I'm in Chutz Laretz, I always say to David, my Mori U Rebbe in computers. You follow? He taught me, he challenged me. It's 10 years ago already. He works for Satna. It's very interesting. I have a few Talmidim who are high up in Satna. One is the head of all their psychological guidance, and he's the top assistant to Niedenberg, to the Satma spokesman. He's what Satma needs. Clean shaven, native English, appears well. And he himself wears a kippah shrugah. I don't know all the time, but certainly on Shabbos. Go and figure it out. But Panas is Panasar. Maybe he's an undercover agent in Satma. So He taught me how to use the computer. So I'm not an expert, but a little bit I know what to look for. So if you look at the Haredi sites, if you listen to Rakefet a year ago, he went berserk because one of the Satmar Rabbanim were here. I think it was Reb Zalman. And they went to Tzfat for Shabbos. And they videoed the whole event in Tzfat on Shabbos. No, what just happened less than a week ago? Rosh Hashanah. Go to the Google, Rav HaGaon Google, and ask Rav HaGaon Google what happened in Vishnitz in Bnei Brak on Rosh Hashanah. And you will get video clippage of the whole davening in Vishnitz in the big tent they put up on Rosh Hashanah. And you yell, you shout. So they claim it was a non-Jew, probably a Russian. By the way, most Russians claim they're not Jews to make a panasa. Downstairs on Shabbos, all the guy did this. We pay for this 24-hour, seven having Shomrim here. No, these people on Shabbos, they have to work the computer, they have to work the cameras. They claim they're not Jewish. I guarantee if you look into it, you'll find that half of them are really Jewish, and that was what happened in America. You remember the story in America, the Hanukkah, when it was pouring snow and buses got stuck on the highway, so there was one bus, I remember all the details, one bus, I think it was with Beis Yaakov girls or something. So they went off the highway, and their madricha checked for the nearest Chabad shul, and they called the rabbi, and within an hour, everyone was put up for Shabbos. They came up with food. I mean, leave it to Chabad. The other bus was on the way to Lakewood, and they called Lakewood, and they got an answer. It's pouring snow. If the driver's not Jewish, continue to Lakewood. It's Sakonat Nefashet. To stop the bus on the highway and let off with these 50 youngsters. So they reached Lakewood and everything, and driver, turned out the driver was Russian, he was Jewish. And the same thing in Bnei Brak, New Jack with the Mechirat Chametz. For years they were selling Chametz to this so-called guy in Bnei Brak, a Russian. And it turned out, they found out, the guy thought he was not Jewish because on his Russian internal passport, it read that he's a Russian, his father is Russian. It didn't read the Ivrei, it didn't read Jewish. Found out, he mentioned Kliach Yad, he believes his mother was Jewish. They checked it out, the chametz they sold for all the years was sold to a 100% Jew. And this is life today, you have to be careful. But what's going to be with Shabbos? If we permit taking movies, if we permit cars, we're any different than the conservative movement? Where are we any different than that responsum that was written in 1953, signed by three rabbis, Adler, Agus, and Friedman. Rabbi Friedman I knew very, very well. We rabbinated together in Essex County. Rabbi Adler, I told you, his father was the Rosh Yeshiva of MTJ. Rabbi Moshe succeeded him. His father died in a swimming. He drowned, I think it was in Coney Island or Brighton Beach. He drowned swimming. And that's how Rabbi Moshe became Rosh Yeshiva in MTJ, late 30s. This was his son. And Rabbi Agus was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik and Rabbi Dov Revel. And these three rabbis permitted driving. And as they say, the rest is history. Where do we draw the line? Right, it's a very delicate question. I'm not here to paskin. When someone asks me a shayla on Yom Tov Sheni, you know my answer. Do you want a psak, or do you want me to justify what you want to do? That's what I answer. Most people want it, that they'll tell you, well, I'm keeping 2 days. All right, I'll explain. You're keeping 2 days in Israel. I don't agree with it. I think it's the worst psak possible. But you have al milas malach, Rav Moshe Feinstein. You want to keep 1 day? All right, I think that's a better psak. Yesh al milas malach. Give them a whole list of from the Chacham Tzvi on, the Chaim Briska, Rav Kook, Chazon Ish, Rav Avadja, etc. You want to keep a day and a half, which is really the psak I give, Moriu Rebbe, the second day is Lechumra, but davening, everything else is like in Israeli. Same thing with this Shiloh. When people ask me, I tell them, look, if you want to invite someone under these conditions, yesh al milas malach. If you ask me whether I'm happy with it, I'm not happy. But I have to be realistic. You follow me, Effie? I can't be an idiot and say I'm right and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is wrong. I can't be an idiot and say Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is wrong. Remember, Rav Aaron quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman's psak. But emotionally, it challenges me. Where are we different? And remember, I built the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. When Scotty hears that today, he figures, what's the big deal? There are Orthodox shuls in every less community in suburban Essex. The President of the United States, his whole family come. Kushner, where do they come? Livingston. There's nothing there, just tremendous conservative reform temples. It's the heart of reform and conservative. The rabbi world for Rabbi Friedman, Teddy Friedman, President of the Rabbinical Assembly. I spoke at a funeral, Abra Dean's funeral, read about him in Washington, 1963 perhaps, and the Rabbi Louis Levitsky, that's his children's rabbi, came over to me and offered me a shtela for $25,000. I was making $8,000 a year between teaching in yeshiva and my shtela, and I said to him, does it have a mechitza? And he called me a masochist. That's what you're doing to your wife and children, a masochist. So we had to establish this. All right, today in Maplewood, we're not a big shul. There's no housing. It's only one family. But the community has. The shul move took over the church. There's an Erev. I mean, it's beyond words what came into Maplewood. And then you go to South Orange. You go to Short Hill. West Orange is major already. Wow. Livingston, Springfield, Linden today. I open up Sukkot, Yom Tov. There's an advertisement. Come, don't move to Israel. Move to Linden, New Jersey. The heart of you. You saw the advertisement or not? I saw it there. I remember I showed it to Mark. I believe I saw it there. Meyinyan l'inyan b'yoto inyan. Let's begin. We're shooting around. Shabbos, Jew, Gentile. Same problem. Jew, not observing Jew. I begin with the Mishnah Halachot, Reb Menashe Klein. Everything is based upon, we start with Reb Menashe Klein. He's our starting point. Reb Menashe HaKatan. Mishnah Halachot, volume 18. Why is volume 18 different? It was published posthumously. And it's a very nice volume. It summarizes each paragraph it's very easy to work with. Volume 18, Siman Reish Tet. Now, What he's describing here, the reason I called this shiur Las Vegas, and I want to respond to questions I've gotten from Chutz Laretz. I make up the title of the shiur thinking that's what I'm going to do. Sometimes the title of the shiur becomes very unimportant, it's a very small part of the shiur. Maybe one day I'll be privileged, someone will go through the 1,500 plus lectures on YU Torah and summarize them so that they can be indexed and you can find what you want easily. But I called it Las Vegas because this is where I first saw what's being described in this tshuva. And the tshuva is from 1987. These are shows, business shows. I have one grandson who all grew up in Katamon, and all his life this kid was not the greatest scholar in learning or in school, but always had an interest in the new gadgets that were coming out. So the Ribbono Shel Olam is kind, and believe it or not, he gets a does the army, Hesder, everything, gets a bachelor's from Bar Ilan, and winds up working in exactly this field that interests him. He just was selected as Worker of the Year by his firm. It's 019. It's the only totally religious phone system in Israel, 019. Druze, only Druze are allowed into the building on Shabbat. So he's been working there for quite a few years, and now he became a big shot. Dov, how did he become a big shot? Remember what I told you 20 minutes ago? Because we spoke English to him. So this wise Alec, who always laughs, why do I have to know English, winds up going with his boss, and I'm very happy, like my daughter says, his boss is not just frum, he's a frummy. So no matter where they are, they're going to toe the mark. He goes up, his boss takes him, China, he just was in Germany, a few months in Hong Kong. Why do they have to go all over? Steve, shows, business, the new phones, the new developments, the new, you follow me? And this has become very big. Like, what do we know? The Kosher Food Festival, Javits Center. In New York, you look at the Kosher Food Festival. I think I once attended. In my mind, I see myself walking in the aisles, food. You don't have to eat for 5 weeks before and 5 weeks afterwards. Wherever you go, they're giving out samples. The only problem is, this is Milchiks, this is Fleishiks, this is Milchiks, Fleishiks. So you got to be careful with the samples. Go to all the Milchiks ones first and come back the next day, go to the Fleishiks, because you can't do it in one day. It's too big. Now, these trade shows are very, very important because that's where billions of dollars of business is done. That's where you get the orders. That's where you meet the manufacturers. That's where you can have input. Let's say you're going to order 1,000 phones. You want printed on at Yeshiva University. You follow? You see all the gadgets that YU gives out to attract students. I have sunglasses, Yeshiva University. I have a baseball cap, Yeshiva University. So I walk in the streets of Jerusalem, so wise people give me a dig. Yeshiva University, you know, I say, yes, they pay me with merchandise. You don't get a salary, Baruch Hashem. You get sunglasses, you get a hat, you get a t-shirt. Baruch Hashem, they want to attract students. I don't even know what they're giving out there. They're fans, you're putting to you. I couldn't believe what I saw downstairs to attract kids. In my days, what attracted you was the chance to learn Torah Hashem Tamima with great Rebbeim. Today, Allah Narishkeit, but all right. By the way, I may have to put on my Yankee hat. Let's see what happens. They got off to some start in the playoffs. The Medavsen Zvaitazozainazay hit the World Series. Effie, remind me, if they hit the World Series, my Yankee hat, win or lose, but you got a show covered. Isaac back here. No? So how did these, have you ever been to a show like this? A fair, you know, they give it different names. So how does it work? You let's go to Las Vegas. And by the way, most of, a good deal of these type of events outside of aircraft where you need, you know, major space, Las Vegas is the home because it has the double attraction. It's space, hotels, and it's Las Vegas. Gambling. Have you ever been to Las Vegas? Steve, you get off the plane, already in the airport, it's gambling machines all over the hotels, they take you, they want. What's even worse, and I saw this, I have a brother in Las Vegas, and I was scholar in residence there, so I've been to Las Vegas a number of times. I have to admit, I never gambled. I think once we were with people, that was in Atlantic City, so they gave us $10 or $20, insisted we have to gamble. I don't remember, I got to ask my wife if we lost everything, if we had something left at the end, but it's monish unbelievable. The worst part is, there's the massive gambling outside, then there's selected areas like it's a cheder yichud, and there are the biggest gamblers where we're talking each roll is $1,000 plus, and there they bring over liquor and cake, and the women are dressed, I would say, undressed to perfection, who are serving you and sitting there in that atmosphere. No, you see young yidden mit langer bod and payas and black clothes and gambling away with your own eyes. You see it. And this is why Dov, the Rebbe, cries, Rebbe Yisrael Salanter began in 1840. I was with him in 1840 when he began to preach publicly. You know how many people he's affected until today? Not even 1,000. I count myself as one of the 999. The Hasidic world, millions upon millions upon millions. But to be a Hasid is on a low level or a high level. Musa, there's only one way. It's up there. So Las Vegas, now you have in Las Vegas shuls near the hotels. You have hotels. You know how many kosher eateries there are in Las Vegas? Chabad is all over the place. I think there's three different day schools. Oh, what you have today in Las Vegas. Until the recession, it was the fastest growing Orthodox community in the United States. Where my brother Davins, it's like you're in paradise. It's a suburb. Oh, wow, with a big lake with palm trees. And Chabad, they begin at 10 o'clock. It's unbelievable. And let the Chazesh tug in Las Vegas. So now you rent space. By the way, some of these events, so many from people come that a minyan is arranged in advance. They already know from year to year, Chavra, Chavra, Itlay, and they bring a Sefer Torah, they make a minyan in the hotel, a minyan, kosher food, Hashtia kadat eino nes, for money you get honey. Okay? Hashtia kadat eino nes, if he translate it, for money you get honey. That's the way it works. Now, what happens? They can't give you a store. What they do is they set up booths. You have partitions. At one time it was like curtains. Today it's more sophisticated. It's like a movable mechitza. And you have your name, and you have showcases, and you have, of course, a desk where you sit, where you take orders. You have a bit of a staff there. No? When are these events held? Let's go into Rabbinical Council of America. I didn't even have to have conventions today, because today everything is done via the internet. I was just invited to speak, not at RCA, but the Rabbinical Alliance, what's it, Igud HaRabbanim, I think it's called the Rabbinical Alliance in America, and they have every Rosh Chodesh a meeting, and I told them I don't live in America, probably the only Rosh Chodesh I'm in America is the only Rosh Chodesh they don't meet. It's 11 times a year, Rosh Chodesh Av, it's the heart of the summer, that's why I'm in the New York area, and that's when they're not meeting. But when do the rabbis get together? RCA in my time, in the 60s, the 70s, the 70s when I was here, but I was sent by Israel government to address the convention. The convention, where do you get together? Thursday, Friday. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Wednesday, no, let me give it right. Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, Thursday morning. Convention ends. Effie, why? Why? The rabbis have to get back to their shuls for Shabbos. Ah, now take a business convention. When will it begin? Thursday evening at the earliest. Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. Monday morning, they close shop. The weekend, during the week, you gotta be home, you gotta be in your store, you gotta be in your business. So that Saturday becomes one of the busiest days. No, the shaila is obvious. This guy rents space from Jew. And by the way, in the import-export business, a very high percentage of survivors got involved after World War II. A very high percentage were from. And afterwards, your children, your grandchildren, the business continues. And in general today, thank God, to be a Shomer Shabbos is much more widespread than it was when I was growing up. When I was growing up, there was, as I told you so many times, as I write about in Washington, there were more than 700,000 Jews in the Bronx. How many Shomer Shabbos families were there? How many? I don't know. 10? Maybe in the East Bronx, around Rabbi Bick, there was a bit of a nucleus. Outside of that, the only Shomer Shabbos family I know, Kupinski. Recognize the name? It's the name in Har Nov, the Kupinski family, Nebuch. His grandson was killed in the massacre in the shul when the Rebbe's grandson was killed, Aryeh Kupinski. Maybe I have the wrong first name. There was a brother who worked here. Aryeh is right. I'm not confusing with his brother was Dov, so it's Aryeh. So Aryeh's grandfather, Elia, and his brother Baruch were both in their 40s. They were the only Shomer Shabbos Jews I knew above the age of 18 and under the age of 70. Got it? Who saw a Shomer Shabbos? Today, many more. No, you're renting. It's business. You can't rent for just day by day. It's a four-day deal. Why do you do Shabbos? And mind you, your name is on your place. For the sake of argument, Mazel Enterprise. Your name is there. The poster. The space is there. Alright? Shabbos, you're not there. People will come by and start waiting for you. Figure, alright, the guy went out to the lavatory. He went out to have a bit of lunch. People are waiting for you. What do you do? Can you put up a sign? Can you say, I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back Saturday night. Can you hire a Gentile to stand there and to explain to the people, yes, this is Mazel Enterprise. This is the business. This is what we sell. But the owners are Sabbath observers. They'll be back Saturday night when it gets dark. Interesting questions. A Gentile. Gentiles taking the movies in Vishnitz, in Satmar. Can the Gentile stand there, answer questions? Interesting. You rented the place, your name. People will think it's open. You can't close it down. It's part of the rental agreement. Close it down? You can't really close it down. People are walking back and forth. It's a very fascinating question. More than that, the whole interrelationship here, what does Shabbos mean? Can you stand there on Shabbos and answer the questions? Just tell the people, look, I'm Shomer Shabbos, I can't deal with you today. Come back tonight. Come back tomorrow. Can you stand there? More than that, let me ask a different question. Forget about a trade show. You're a businessman. You have a store in town, right here in Jerusalem. You have a showcase window. Are you supposed to close down the window on Shabbos? Or no, leave it open and people are going to walk by. People are going to look at the window display. What do they call it? The window shopping. Is there a technical name? I believe there is. Help me out. Is there a technical name? Window shopping. Go to look at the space, the place, the shoes, I like those shoes. I'm going to come back on Sunday. Do you close down? Do you leave open? All right. This was the question that he got. And it's beautiful the way he describes it, exactly the way I described it, that you hire a place, you put up curtains. Today, I don't think they work with curtains. They work with movable partitions, fancy movable partitions. You all know what I'm talking about. You can see in Las Vegas, the partitions all have designs on them. It's not cheap work. It's beautiful, expensive partitions. The Japanese specialize in it, etc. V'nafsho b'sheilato. Heyot v'amunim osim et yom ha'shuk hazeh shlosha arba yomim u'beineichem yom echad hu Shabbos Kodesh. Ah, what does he do for Shabbos? And even if he's not there, first of all, he wants to know, can he stand there? And even if he doesn't stand there, people are going to walk back and forth and see the place. They're going to know that it's Mazel Enterprise. Then maybe he can hire a Gentile. And that way the Gentile can answer all their questions. Or no, is it wrong? And here you get involved with the whole question of Amira La'akam. Now, if you go through the Tshuva, you can get all the sources. Amira Lakam is not just on Shabbos. You all know that Amira Lakam is an Issa de Rabbanan. It's not just on Shabbos. All right, there are times when it is permissible. It's permissible since it's an Issa de Rabbanan. B'makom tsa lo gazru Rabbanan. How does this affect the halacha? A lot has been written on this. Very simple. You're cold. You don't know what Israel is like when we came in Aliyah 50 years ago. I remember teaching in Michlala wearing a coat with the hood over my head and my ears. People had no money for heat. Who heard of heat? Heat? Buildings were built in Jerusalem. Who heard of central heating? Who heard of heating in each apartment the way they're building today so you can control your own heat? And a great lady once said to me, when you come in Aliyah, it's Mori Rebbe's daughter, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, once said to me, you judge a person whether he's niggardly or not by the amount of heat he leaps on. You follow me? When you control your own heat, boy, does that show who you are and how generous of spirit, etc. And, all right, so there's a whole world of literature from the Rishonim already that you can ask a guy to put up the heat in Shabbos, because if it suddenly gets cold and you're not prepared for it, we all are considered sickly when it comes to heat. So there, Amira La'akum is mutter. Now give me another example. Out of the 1900s, the late 1900s, endless tshuvot. Where did you grow up, Effie? Where did you grow up in Woodmere? You grow up, come on, you didn't grow up in the East Bronx. You're a little bit, you become used to the good life, heat in the winter and air conditioning in the summer. My wife always says to me, how did we survive? How we grew up? Who heard air conditioning? She still remembers in Brooklyn, all the Yiddish family sat outside East New York, all the gossips, Nach Marev, it was too hot to go inside yet. Ah, but now you're in the Young Israel of Woodmere, and 1,300 people davening at the main minyan, and suddenly there's a problem with the air conditioning. Nu, are you allowed to tell the guy to fix it? Reb Moshe has a tshuva on it. Nu, is he matir or not? Absolutely matir. Just as we're all sickly when it comes to too much heat, too little heat, we're all sickly when it comes to too little air conditioning. All right, I'm still a little bit different than most people. When I go to America in the summer, I get up to speak, I say, I can't understand you people, how much money you burn turning the shul into the North Pole. You go into some shuls, oh my gosh, it is freezing. You gotta wear winter clothes. And they'll always say, you're right, but it's this balabas, he's in charge, he gives the money. You look at the balabas, 320 pounds. No wonder he needs so much air conditioning. But when he gives $320,000 a year, for every pound, another $1,000, believe me, the Devas Hattigelt has the say. No two ways about it. So, very interesting question. But Amira La'akum, you can't just guess the guy, but more than that, Dov, you might think on Wednesday, I can tell a guy, look, on Shabbos at 10 o'clock, I need you to do this. What's wrong? It's Wednesday. Even that is asa. Amira La'akum. Then you take the other side of the coin. What is Shabbos about? This was that whole debate I showed you from Mordechai Elephant's memoir, when his wife tells him off, that kid in his house answering the phone on Shabbos, and Mordechai Elephant doesn't say a word to him, and his wife wipes the floor with her husband. Soon you'll be a Machalos Shabbos. What's Shabbos all about? Can you worry about what's going to be Sunday? Can you worry about the people who want to know? Can you worry about the business? Can you worry about the rental? You all know an open Gemara, I'll give you the source later, an open Gemara in Shabbos, that Shabbos is a different day. You can't get involved in weekday matters. A whole Shiloh on Shabbos. Are you allowed to read a secular book, a general book? Are you allowed to study for exams on Shabbos? Chemistry, biology, whatever, world history. Are you allowed to read books on Shabbos? You know how much has been written on these topics? Shabbos is a day, you have to be removed. I have to admit, even I don't touch a book on baseball on Shabbos. During the week, when I'm dead tired, I go to sleep. All right, we can finish off the day a little bit on Babe Ruth, on Ted Williams. I have a Talmud, feeds me books. I want to give them to Miller, but he's not here now. He reads them, and then they go on to the library in Efrat. And no one even knows where they're coming from. But Baruch Hashem, Shabbos is different. No, this poor guy renting space, big show, millions of dollars at stake. What can he do? And all right, so Reb Menashe Klein says, let me answer, go question by question. And he says, as far as renting the place, there's no question you're allowed to rent. You're renting it for 4 days. It's a business show. You're not going to do anything on Shabbos, but it's all part. That's the whole idea that if someone hires you for the sake of argument to be a caterer, so you're setting up before Shabbos, you're cleaning up after Shabbos, you are working on Shabbos, but it's caught up in the general rental. It's the same thing when a person's a scholar in residence. If he gets up to speak off the cuff, he's not allowed to take money. He's working on Shabbos. When I get up to speak, I always have a paper in front of me with highlights written out. I don't write word by word. You know the way I teach. I can't. Unfortunately, people write to me that they want my manuscript if I could make it available. And I'm not like the Rav. The Rav used to write out word by word by word. He wrote out even the Yotzai Drasha, the Tshuva Drasha, he wrote it out in Hebrew, gave it in Yiddish. Then there would be times when he spoke in English. He read word by word the manuscript. But You got to do preparation in advance. Otherwise, you can't take any money. People pay you scholar in residence. You're getting paid for your preparation. I'm speaking on Shabbos, but I prepared before Shabbos. I'll reevaluate after Shabbos. All right? There's nothing wrong with renting. But what do you do with Shabbos? So he says, one Eitzah, he says, simply put up a sign, and on the sign it should say, this business is closed for the Sabbath. We will open again at this hour on Saturday night. And he says, and you have no responsibility. People are going to come, are going to look at the phones, they're going to look at the window, going to look at the display. Fine. That is not your responsibility. And here he refers to what I just said a moment ago. He says, anyone who has a store, you have a chalon ra'ava, an oish lager, he calls it in Yiddish. Everyone, you don't board up your store. The only place stores are boarded up when you're worried about a robbery. And that's a bad sign. By the way, in Borough Park, there were two robberies, last night. Two very frightening. Kids were on the street and then a store in the heart of Borough Park. Alright, that's a very bad sign. When you come to a neighborhood and all the stores are boarded up, it's a sign that it's a high crime area. But generally speaking, every Jew owns stores. The store windows are readily available on Shabbos. Anyone can see that the merchandise, but you're not there, you're not selling, you have nothing to do with it, and therefore it is absolutely permissible. Okay, then he says the other Eitzah, which he doesn't like that much. He says, you're worried that even if you put up a sign, what does the sign mean? People are going to just see from afar Mazel Enterprise. They'll see no one there, and they'll think you're coming back shortly. You're only there. You're only gone for a few minutes. They'll think business as usual. And therefore, perhaps there's an idea to have, you can stand there, and you can tell the people, come back after Shabbos, we're not open on Shabbos, they'll see you're a religious Jew, you can stand there, but here we come to the basic klal. Look in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Shin Vav, Sif Katan Aleph. And here they're quoting the Gemara, Shabbos, Kuf Nun Amid Bet, and the Gemara, Mimtzol Cheftzecha, Chafatzim Asurim Afilu B'dov Eshein Osa Shum Malacha, Kegon Shema'anyein Nechassav Lirot Matzarich L'macha, Oleilech L'petach HaMedina, Kidei Sheyimacher Latzeit B'layla L'mechatz, וכן אין מחשיבים על התחום לזכור פוחלים. And what you see here, it's based upon the Gemara in Shabbos. It's black and white. Shabbat, you cannot worry about weekday matters. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Mimso Cheftzecha, you have to withdraw. Even if it's totally permissible, even if you're not doing any malacha, but you have to totally withdraw. And this is so true, and by the way, so difficult. Have you ever taken a flight, Motzoi Shabbos? No? Are you allowed? Technically speaking, Shabbos ends 7 o'clock. The flight is 1 o'clock in the morning. You'll never be the same that Shabbat. You're going to be looking at your watch. You're going to be worried. You're going to be tense. I don't recommend it unless it's an absolute necessity and you have no choice. Lo aleinu, sometimes you have to fly, a funeral, whatever it is, you have no choice. But this is exactly the concept of Shabbos withdrawal. I remember, let me take it into Yom Noraim. I was a kid seeking sanctity. We were kids, a handful of kids in a big Bronx seeking Yiddishkeit. Alright, I remember I learned in Lakewood, and I was in Lakewood Rosh Hashanah. What an experience. Davening with the Baron Cutler. Davening with the old-timers from Kletz. It was like a different world. It's not the Lakewood of today. It's a different world then. So then we came and wind up in YU. You can understand why when you read Washington. And I wasn't happy to daven in my local shul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Nothing, what's there? Everyone comes to shul with Mechalalei Shabbos, Sochlein Nevelot and Treifat. All right, at least Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they were, the Golda Meir said, I remember this in 69 in her address to the nation, she said, a Jew who doesn't feel different on Yom Kippur has lost his Jewishness. I can guarantee you Gantz and Lapid and Lieberman don't understand what Golda Meir said. So, we davened in YU. We made a special minyan with the Mashgiach. This was a moment in time. It was in Bernard Revel Graduate School in a building that doesn't stand today. And on Amsterdam Avenue, these were buildings, cheap buildings built by government money after World War II to provide space to teach GIs returning from service. So Bernard Revel Graduate School was in one of these buildings. Was subsequently knocked down. The Gottesman Library is there today where this school was at the time. And we're davening and the Mashgiach gets up and he says, I'm living it in Yiddish, but I guess I'll have to say it in English. Let me see if I can. Mashgiach says, we shouldn't look at the watches, Ne'ilah. He said, Yom Kippur is a moment of eternity. Let's keep it. Let's not rush out of it. And I remember Ravol got up and argued with the Rosh Yeshiva in public that people are fasting, we have to finish on time. All right, yesh panim lekan v'panim lekan. But one thing is for sure, the feeling on Yom Kippur is totally different. If you don't feel it's a totally different day, you're lacking the chavaya, the understanding, the depth of Yom Kippur. People complain, they daven too long, and Rosh Hashanah had complaints on all sides, even from a Talmud in America, who's almost my age, and he's complaining. And where'd he daven? West Hempstead. It's, Effie, I don't know about Woodmere, but this is West Hempstead. And he's complaining. And you know, to me, Rosh Hashanah, you know, the davening, the musaf, the Shmon Esrei, the psukim, you're living all of Torah history, all of Jewish history, the past, the present, the future. Shabbat has to be kept. Very similar. It has to be a total different feeling. I remember the Mashgiach, Rav Lesser, I see him in front of me, min daf daven in Anderish of Shabbos. Shabbos, you have to daven differently. It's Shabbos, it's Kedusha. That's exactly this halach, exactly this gemara, exactly the way the Shulchan Aruch states it, and look into the Mishnah Brura, and this is it, Shabbos, don't be in a rush to get back to the week. Certainly on Shabbos, don't measure your walking to be at the border because you want to go to the Merchatz. Like in my own modern language, Scotty, I'll say you want to go swimming. You want to go, no, then they didn't have a bath in their house and he's running to the bath. It was a hot day Shabbos. And you want to be as far as you can walk on to the end of the Tchum Shabbos because you're going to hire workers in the next city. And this is the whole problem. When you stand there, when you're going to be part of the show, when you're going to be involved, when you're going to tell tradespeople, come back tomorrow, it's not the best idea. You're probably better off hiring a Gentile. And that Gentile will just answer their questions, come back tomorrow. He's not doing any malacha. It's not a mira la'akam. Whatever you can't do on Shabbos, you cannot ask a Gentile to do outside of the makom mitzar, outside of what I said a few minutes ago. And finally, he quotes something at the end of this paragraph from the Sefer Hasidim. It is so true. V'katav b'sefer Hasidim al yidar adam b'ir sheyom hashuk b'shabbat ki eifshah shelo yichtah. That it's better a person shouldn't live in a city where Yom HaShuk is on Shabbat. And remember, when the Jews lived in the Golah, the Yom HaShuk was inevitably on Shabbat. The Gentiles went to church Sunday. It's not like today. Today there's no Sunday, there's no Gentile, there's no church. The only places you see churches are in Texas. You go down south. We were driving on a Sunday. My Talmud was drunk. We were driving from Dallas to Austin on a Sunday. Every church parking lot was filled to capacity. Go to churches. When's the last time Trump went to church? I think he goes to a synagogue more often than he goes to church. When he went to France, when's the last time people went to church? I mean, it's just beyond belief. All belief has been eradicated by the modern person. It's I told my grandson, everyone worships idols today. And his name is John Doe. The idol he worshipped is John Doe. He decides, what, you see what YU's going through? The gays marching, demanding, rewrite the Torah, change the Torah. Kids without kippot. This is, but it's not just YU. It's indicative of the world. The Western world, no God, no religion, no surrender. The whole concept that you surrender, that you willingly don't engage in work on Shabbos, don't eat certain food, don't seduce every woman you see. This goes contrary to the modern world, the modern world. And this is Sefer Hasidim. You want to live where the Gentiles run the fair on Shabbat? There's no way that you cannot be influenced. Your mind, it can't be the eternal feeling. It can't be the Shayom Shakulu Shabbat Menucha. It cannot be. It cannot be. But he adds on, however, if the Shuk Eino B'Shchuna Yehudim Shari, if the Shuk is not in a Jewish neighborhood, then it's permissible. And of course, what he's saying is, the Jew could pull away, and Shabbat, he doesn't have to see. He's not part of it. He'll go back on if it is on Sunday. If not, he'll be there on Friday. But these problems, what the Jew went through, but this is life. We live in the big world. You can't build a ghetto. Even in Mea Shearim, there's no ghetto today. The kid from Mea Shearim just walks a few blocks out of Mea Shearim. He's exposed to an entirely different world. And these are the challenges. You can't escape. But you're a business person. You have to go to Las Vegas. You can't give up the show. You can't give up the experience. You have to make money. You have to make a living for good purposes. I mean, listen, to be a religious Jew, life costs a lot more. Kosher food, and you're more makpid, glatt kosher, and yeshiva tuition. Just think what yeshiva tuition costs. That's one of the greatest encouragements for Aliyah. Half of Beit Shemesh was built running away from paying yeshiva tuition. State of Israel, you can raise children with a good education, and it's one-tenth the price of America, or perhaps even less than one-tenth. Okay? But people need money. We don't want to put down money. We don't believe in poverty. We want to be able to live properly. As the Rebbe used to say, Yish halacha, to live in dignity. This is part of being a Jew. Sheish yamim tasim alechtecha. V'yom hashvii kodesh l'Hashem alechtecha. There's nothing wrong. A nephew asked me, he's already influenced by some of his friends from Lakewood. He said, how do you know you have to work? How do you know? You know, these kids work out a whole system. They live off the American government. They get this type of aid, that type of aid, food stamps. If you shop in Borough Park, you see everyone in front of you paying with food stamps. I didn't know what those stamps were. And then they explained to me, food stamps, whatnot, Lakewood. All right. Is it good? Is it bad? To me, it's demeaning in my own personal feeling, but I grew up in a different era. But to work, dignity, I sent my nephew study Ish Halacha, to live in dignity, Milu Ta'aretz V'kivshuhu, and the Rebbe interprets that to live in dignity. It leads to a different question, up to now, and I wish I had a black and white answer, Effie. I've been asked this question 1,000 times over. But did the Rav really believe, Danny, what do you say? Torah in Derech Eretz, Torah Umada. Did he believe, like Rav Hirsch, that was an absolutely lachatchila, or was it only a reflection of the circumstances in which we live in the year 2020? It's a very interesting question. Rav Hirsch, Effie, no question about it. It's a lachatchila. No question. I don't care, Scotty, what they told you in Washington Heights over at Breuer's. If you don't go to university and don't have a degree, don't have a profession, you are not a good Jew. Period. Read the 19 letters, study the 19, between the 19 letters. If you don't know that, Isaac, you don't know how to breathe air either. Take my word, Fred. The 19 letters. Tell me, did the Rav hold like that? Vic, did you ever master Ish Halacha? Took me 3 tries to me. I finally mastered it in basic training. I took a Xerox copy with me, and every free moment, and I mastered it. I was old enough to understand the Rebbe. As a kid, I couldn't understand the depth of Ish Halacha. No, there it's a lachatchila. Open up, Rakefet, the second volume, where the Rebbe talks about Yeshiva University, and Steve, you will find these lines. Because the times demand it. Wow. What a difference. I don't have a definitive answer. And by the way, I've said this in public, and rabbis jump on me. One rabbi a week later gave a whole talk that I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about. The Rav Hirsch dancing together. Pardon me, that's not the Rav. That's Rav Hirsch, yes. But the Rav, nuanced. How would he view the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas today? Isaac, can you give me the name of the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas?
Lichtenstein.
It's his grandson, Reb Yitzchak, Itzi. No? Is he proud of him or not?
I'm sure.
Okay. His nephew, Rav Moshe Meiselman, denies that he has a PhD from MIT, right or wrong? Would the Rav be proud of him? Rav Meir Tversky considers Chabad up because of the Talmud Rebbe considers it an interesting development. Interesting question. Though not every question has to be answered black and white. Let that question hang fire. To reiterate, I have a few more things to do, but time is running against us at this moment. We started a new area, but a continuation, the Jew, fellow Jews, and Gentile. A very fascinating question with Las Vegas. Now, what do you do for Shabbat? And there are many alternatives. You can close down by putting up a sign and say you're not going to be here. But that's the least desirable because people will come, see, won't look at the little words and think you're going to be back in a minute. You can stand there yourself. There's nothing wrong with standing there and telling people, I'm Shana Shabbos, it's not open today. But that gets you involved. Your Shabbos is not the same. It's worrying about Shabbos. Worrying about Shabbos. What about the Yankees? I remember coming into Young Israel of Kew Gardens Hills And the janitor would have newspapers for people to give them out afterwards. And all they were looking, the Yankees. And I remember this summer, someone came over to me, was in Lawrence, and told me the score of the Friday night game, where he already knew, and I don't know. Is it Shabbos stick? All right, we'll let that hang fire. But my feeling is not. Baruch Hashem, we can do without the Yankees on Shabbos, but I don't want... I realize for some people it's pikuach nefesh, it's their health is at stake. But a very interesting question. Maybe to hire a goy is the best eitzah. You're not telling the goy to do malacha, but you're telling the goy, tell everyone we'll open again after Shabbat. We'll continue, we'll pick up here and continue this whole topic. Be'ezrat HaNatan Yakoach after Sukkah. Tomorrow morning, I'm starting... I have to say, a lot of what I say are facts. Anyone can hit the facts, do the research. Tomorrow I'm starting a theory. It's taken me a few weeks to prove, but it's going to be unbelievably fascinating what I'm giving all the facts, and I will stand on it that the big three forced the conservative movement to admit they're conservatives, with a capital C. And you'll see, I'm going to prove it, 100 years ago, but very fascinating material. A lot of this material just came to light in the last few years, so you'll understand. I want to say something very, let me just find it. One second, it's... Not going. I don't see it here, but it's... If you see, I know what I want to say. I just wanted to show it to you, but okay, we can do without it. It's in... It was on... Made the rounds in the newspapers and on the websites, and I saw it published in Chabad's Sichat HaShavua, I think it's called. You know, it's so depressing, all the enmity that's espoused against Torah. Lieberman, Gans, Lapid's wife, I told you who she is. Lapid's wife is the great-granddaughter of Rav Amiel, of the man who defeated Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, for the chief rabbinate of Tel Aviv in 1935. That's his granddaughter. All these people wouldn't be here if not for the generations before Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. Our own families, those of us that are in America more than 100 years, my family 120, my wife's family 150 already, our relatives without Torah, Jewishness disappears. Period. It's sad. And here in Israel, you know, the kids growing up, now these are kids in B'nai Akiva Yeshiva. And their Rosh Yeshiva is a Baal Tshuva. He was raised in State Boker. And he's a Talmud Chacham, Yirei Shemayim. And the kids were talking how depressing it is, all the billboards you see, signs, billboards, and particularly out of Yerushalayim, out of the from areas, people scantily clothed, and advertising of events and affairs that are so distant from Yiddishkeit. So the kids decided to surprise their Rosh Yeshiva, high school kids. They chipped in, and they put up a big billboard near the yeshiva, near the highway. And it reads, the new Zman is beginning, and we're starting Masechet Shabbat. You know, Abba Yitziyot Shabbat, the first Mishnah, with a big picture of the Mishnah and the kids learning. And there's the Rosh Yeshiva, didn't know about it, coming to teach. He sees this big, beautiful sign. And it's a beautiful message for... Stand before Yom HaDin now, Yom Kippur. Beautiful message.
Where's the sign?
It says that Big news, not a new movie, a new play.
Where is it?
I don't have the paper here. With all my papers, it's in Sichat HaShabu of Chabad. It's on the back page is the whole story and a whole description of the Rosh Yeshiva. It's down south, if I'm not mistaken. And the big billboard with this beautiful sign. And this is the way we should go further. The beauty of Torah, the beauty of Yiddishkeit, the beauty of our survival against all odds and all difficulties. A world that does not understand us. But if you heard my talk Thursday night in Beit Shemesh, the world will never understand us. Because there's a big, basic difference between our gestalt and their gestalt. And there's no way to overcome it. Because it's built in to our very belief system in contradistinction to theirs. But that story moved me and made me very happy. For those of you who are Jews and know how to read Hebrew, it hurts me to think people your age are not at home in modern Hebrew. I have three copies here. This is last week from, this is Yisrael Hayom. It's their Friday magazine. And it's a beautiful article on the Americans or the Chayalim Bodedim who come and what it does to their families and how it encourages Aliyah. And here's a typical picture. The father without a kippah, and the son, the chayal, with a kippah. A beautiful article. You probably know some of the people who are described in the article. Okay? I want to comment on this article and totally disagree with the author. This was sent to me by my chaverim, my talmidim, my dear talmidim in Chabad. And I saw it. I know what they're sending me. It's from Chaim Shulsen's blog. Those of you who know who Chaim Shulsen is, I know him too well. But his blog is very fascinating. He sits in South Florida, in Miami Beach, and he knows everything going on in his old homeland, the beautiful state of Israel. So here's an article that the Mizrahi has disappeared. They have children. The party is not strong. What happened to their kids? And I want to tell you, that's the greatest compliment in the world. There is no Mizrahi in America, and there's very little Mizrahi left in Israel. And you know why? Because our children, our grandchildren, in my case, my great-grandchildren, are totally integrated. We have succeeded so with America, everyone won an Aliyah. Read that article. Look for my generation. The greatest Talmidim of the Rav won an Aliyah. Who's Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein? Who's Professor Yaakov Blitzstein? Who's Professor Yitzchak Zimmer? Who's Rabbi Moshe Meiselman? Go right down the line. The greatest Talmidim of the Rav. What do you want? They're here. B'nai Akiva. In Israel, my grandchildren don't understand why we need a religious party. They're totally at home in the Likud. You know how many keep putt around the Likud? You know how many? The great, I would estimate that people voting for the Likud, 70% of them are Shomer Shabbos. Shomer Shabbos, but Parhesia for sure. If not more. Alright, so don't boast so much. And I got news for you. Now that our good people are coming out into the big world, they're going to have the same problem too. Who would ever dream that there's now a Beis Medrash for Beis Yaakov graduates to sit and learn Gemara? In 20 years, they're going to want to be rabbis. They're going to come to, I'm going to have, my type of people will suffer the same questions that I suffer. Who would ever dream there's a Gantz's right hand, there's a woman who claims she's a Gera Hasida. For me, she has a long way to go to prove she's a from Jew, but that's a different story. Listen to my talk on Beit Shemesh. Okay, but that's an interesting article. Here's an article, Deja View, Columbia University invites a Sonei Yisrael to speak, the Prime Minister of Malaysia, and the quotes attribute to him absolutely frightening. The story of the rabbi from Saar, the porn rabbi, it just breaks the heart. I read this, he functioned under different names, different aliases, and they write about him. He taught at the Netivaya, Rebbeinu Shleilim. And on the other side of the coin, Yeshiva University Students Council reinstates group that protested for gay rights. I don't know, do my colleagues, do the Rosh Yeshiva have any say in you anymore? I don't know. Very. All right, this is, if anyone's interested in baseball, these are very interesting articles. Hank Greenberg, and you know, Hank Greenberg grew up five blocks from where I grew up. My father played sandlot baseball with him. And if you read Washington, you'll find out that I used to drive my grandfather crazy every Shabbos on the way to shul when we would walk Washington Avenue and hit Tremont right before the shul that he davened in, where I davened with him. So I would detour. He had to wait for me at the corner. I detoured three stores down. It was a bridal shop. Vic, you know why I detoured? In the window was a picture of Hank Greenberg, and with green ink, dear aunt and uncle, all best wishes in your bridal shop, your loving nephew, Henry Hank, in quotation marks, Greenberg, in green ink. So here's an article on Hank Greenberg helped desegregate baseball. It's an interesting article that when he worked for the Cleveland Indians, he took in a lot of Afro-Americans. And there's another article here, only the New York Times, the research, the 20 greatest pitchers in baseball history, or 25. Also very interesting how they rate them. And this article, my wife loved, women who go to ball games to accompany their husbands, a family that stays together, and they knit at the ballpark. And certain ballparks, they have a certain area where it's for knitting groups for women who knit. One second. I think the rest is for people who are not here today, which disturbs me, but ein ma la'asot. My dear students, thank you so much for your participation. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow morning, for those of you who are brave enough to show up, the magic word, and boy, does that word mean a lot to me. Please, Isaac, Washington, and the continuation in Chelik Dalet of Rakafat Aharon. And anyone who's going to come all year and be my student has a right to ask the Rebbe to give him a gift, Rakafat Aharon Chelik Dalet. I'll be happy to give it. But you have to make the commitment to be my student, not to rob Shvatami, but by making the Rebbe happy, it means he has health. It's good for Shvatami. I hope it's good for the Jews. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya. Better health. Chazak V'yematz. Steve, how do you feel? Good. Good. No class till the week, right, the week after Sukkot. No class till the week after Sukkot.
Did you just tell us, or somebody told me, Kabbalat Shabbat, right after the election, Gantz was seen at the Kotel with two bodyguards? Did you tell me?
Not after the election, before the election. Before. My daughter was there, my daughter saw him, and there was, a Hatha Yiddish and Shama, but in public, you saw his advertisements. Medina Chilonit.
There's still something there.
There's still something there. I should hope so. I should hope so. After they cast, I should hope so. Thank you. Wait, your name.